the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Women's Football Podcast. I'm sat outside a cafe, blue sky surrounding me, and I am joined by a former guest presenter and interviewee on the show and a slightly more pregnant Helen Ward. Helen, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
First question before we jump into the football, how are you and how is the bump doing? You are obviously due in October.
I'm getting bigger and more round, but it's all going well, touch wood, I've not had any problems, and I'm looking forward to meeting baby Ward soon.
Arriving in October, as already said. So for this episode, as we said in the last one, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently. We focused very much on what was going on in the United States and Sweden last time out. This time we're going to have a little bit more of a focus on what is going on in England. And I will be talking to Helen about the England under 20 World Cup side, which obviously disappointingly was eliminated after the group stages. We're going to have a little chat about what's been going on in the WSL, and we will also preview the upcoming game between Helen's Wales side and England, which is taking place in Cardiff on Thursday. I will also be speaking to some French journalists a little bit later on in the show about the upcoming French women's division. And I'll also have a few interviews thrown in, although at the moment I don't know who those interviews are going to be as I record the show. I do have some set up, but I don't want to promise anything just in case they fall through. So when we come back, we will have a chat first off about the under 20 Women's World Cup.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at shekicks.net. And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
TheSoccerDesk.com. Okay, so as mentioned in the intro, we are first off going to have a chat about the under 20 Women's World Cup, and more specifically about the disappointment for England being eliminated at the group stage. Helen, when I saw the results, obviously a draw against Mexico and Korea, defeat against Nigeria in the kind of deciding game that would have seen England through had they won, I don't think we can shirk away from the fact that England have probably underachieved, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. When you look at the England squad and the players that they have, they're all playing first team football, as far as I'm aware, at, you know, in the top two leagues in the country, and you'd expect them to do a bit better, but you know, they struggled for whatever reason and only managed to get the 2 points. But I'm sure themselves and the staff will all be very disappointed that they're home already.
When players come away from a tournament like that, how easy or difficult do you think it is to try and lift yourself? Because you are going over there. They were runners-up in the under-19 European Championships last year. Would have been going into that tournament on a high. To come away and not even get out of the group, how do they try and lift themselves going forward?
I'm sure they will have been very disappointed. I've unfortunately not been in a position to have come home from a tournament. I've not even been to one in the first place, but I'm sure it's a difficult thing to get your head round. They'll probably have their heads down for a few days, but they'll all have club commitments that they're going to jump straight back into, and perhaps that's enough to take their mind off the disappointment of the World Cup.
One of the questions I guess I'd ask is, they obviously qualified through coming runners-up in the Euro under-19s last year, which obviously took place in Wales. I'm not aware, and I would be happy for anyone to tweet me and correct me if I'm wrong, of this team having played any competitive football between that Euro under-19 final and taking it to the field in their first game in Canada. I mean, from a personal perspective, that can't surely be beneficial to that team when they've not had any time on the pitch together. There are new players that have joined that squad, the likes of Gabby George and Leah Williamson, who've jumped up from the under-17s to the under-20s. How are you supposed to mould a side when you're not playing any competitive football?
It must be near on impossible. You know, there's players that maybe weren't there in the under-19s that have come into a new side. I'm not sure how different the squads were, but it can't be easy not playing a game from one year to the next. I find it hard when you haven't played a game for a few weeks. So to do it for a year is going to be difficult. who that's down to, I don't know. Whether they have had behind closed doors games, I don't know. But you would think that leading up to a World Cup, having done so well in the Euros last year, you would try and get some game time for your players to, as you say, mould into some sort of team.
Well, let's not focus too much on all things negative. Obviously, there are some positives. I mentioned the likes of Gabby George and Leah Williamson jumping from the under-17s into the under-20 side. Obviously, they did have some impressive, maybe not results, but I guess there were some encouraging displays in the draws against Korea and Mexico. We have to obviously appreciate the fact that while from a personal perspective, I don't know an awful lot about these sides, to come away and not get beaten against those two teams, come very close to beating Nigeria as well. Let's not forget that England missed a penalty before Nigeria went up the other end and got a penalty of their own. I guess what England will have to focus on now is it's good tournament experience, and now those players will be looking to make the jump to the next level.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, I haven't had the chance to play in a tournament yet. But the experience is only going to serve them well for the future. You know, you take negatives and positives and you take them into future games. And as you said, you've got some real youngsters in that team who have done so well for their clubs playing in the WSL1, you know, at top sides as well. Not just making up the numbers. They're playing well, and they're playing week in, week out, as far as I can see. There are big positives, and I'm sure there were some good individual displays as well. I thought Nikita Paris looked lively in the times that I watched them, and she'll be a big player for both the youth sides and the seniors, I think, in the future. It's not all negative, and as I said, they can take their experiences forward and use everything they've learned to help them in future tournaments that they may well be in.
Yep, agreed. Nikita Paris looked very lively. Beth Mead scored an absolute screamer against Mexico in the second game. If you haven't seen that, I can certainly recommend checking that out on YouTube. I guess my final question would be, Mo Marley obviously oversaw them in the under-19, she oversaw the under-20s. I'm not going to ask you, is she the right person to take them forward? But at the same time, we obviously saw Hope Powell lose her job after the England seniors team underperformed at the Euros last year. Would it be fair to say that sometimes change can be a good thing?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when you look at how well the England senior team have done since they made a change, you think maybe they could have gone a bit further and changed the whole setup from the youth upwards. I don't know how much they've changed in terms of coaches, but obviously the managers still remain pretty similar. So maybe a change is a good thing. Mo's done an absolutely outstanding job, and no one can deny that she's got them into finals of tournaments, you know, quite often in the last few years. So you can't say she's done a bad job, but as you say, perhaps it is time for a change, not only for the team, but for her. She might need a new challenge and move on to something different and get someone else in who's got some fresh ideas just to mix it up a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Mo's certainly done a good job over the years with that England setup. So, well, let's leave it there on the Under-20 World Cup. We're not going to talk too much about the other games because they come thick and fast, and on the day that we're recording, there are quarter-final games taking place, so there'll be no point in Helen and I discussing them because by the time this show comes out, they will have been played already. But obviously, progressing from outside of the groups were the likes of Germany, USA, host Canada, New Zealand created some history as well by qualifying outside of the groups. So we'll talk a little bit more about the tournament in a future show, and when we come back after this break, we'll have a chat about what's going on in the WSL, not the NWSL, the WSL.
Download and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Just search for Women's Football Podcast.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the FA Women's Super League. We'll touch on the first division, and we'll also have a little chat about the second division as well. First place to start, Helen, I guess an opportunity for you to be a little bit smug at this stage of the season, because I think the last time that you came on, while many have been talking up the chances of the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea, I think you actually said to me that Birmingham would do better than expected. What do you think is the secret behind why it is that they've been so, I wouldn't say dominant, but why they've been able to kind of prove the doubters wrong this year?
It's hard to say, really. I think, you know, they lost some big players in the likes of Rachel Williams and Laura Bassett, who have gone on to Chelsea and are doing very well. But I think the players they brought in, such as Remy Allen, have made a big difference, and they seem to have had a very settled team. They knew, you know, the manager knows more or less his strongest starting team, but he's also got players to come into that. The likes of Hannah Kerakopoulos, who I play with at Wales, as you know, she started slowly, but she seems to have played quite a few games lately, which is good. And I think they just they must have a very good team spirit. They're a solid team. They're hard to break down, but they have got the quality to score the goals in the likes of Kirsty Lynette up front, Mel Lawley, and, you know, as I said, Remy Allen will pop up with a few goals. So I think, you know, I'm not surprised that they're doing well. Perhaps I didn't think they'd be riding as high as they are, but, you know, as I said, they've got a good team and they've got a good solid base, so I'm not entirely surprised.
Well, they're currently joint top with Chelsea at the time of recording, but they do have games in hand. Chelsea, I guess, doing as well as expected. They're in the mix. They've obviously had some good results. They obviously had a last-minute winner against Manchester City not so long ago, and they're in the semi-finals of the Conti Cup. I guess for them, are they in a no-win situation in a way, though, where if they were doing well, they're kind of expected, and if they were doing poorly, people would be criticising them because of the players that they brought in?
Yeah, I think so. When you spend the likes of money that is reported to have been spent on the players they've brought in, you would expect them to be right up there challenging. I think I had an interview the other day that Emma did that ruled themselves out of the title challenge, which I'm not entirely convinced by. She'll be disappointed that they lost their last game out, as will all the players. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be right up there right till the end, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won it. They've got some fabulous players. The Korean Ji So-yeon has done very well. Yuki Ogimi, I played with her for a little bit last season, and she's an unbelievable talent, and they've got some of the youngsters coming through, which is nice to see as well. And, you know, yeah, they're in a no-win situation. They're expected to win, and if they don't, they'll be sort of criticised for that, I think, even though it is a fairly new team they've put together.
After a relatively slow start, Manchester City women have gained a bit of pace, got some good wins under their belt. They obviously beat Liverpool Ladies, the champions, in a recent home game. Is it a case of when you have a new team like that and you bring in so many new players, I guess like Chelsea, that it can sometimes take time to gel, and it might be now that things are starting to come to fruition and that's why they're starting to pick up some results?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they've come up into the league as a new team as well. Let's not forget that. They've not, you know, the people behind the scenes and the staff haven't had the experience that some of their players have had of playing in the top league in the country. And as you said, they had a bit of a slow start, which is maybe to be expected with so many changes, but they've got good players in there who are starting to show their true colours. I think some of the younger players, or the fringe players, if you like, have come through and actually really impressed me with some of their performances, who, you know, some people may not have expected the likes of Natasha Flint to come good, but from what I've seen, she's a very good young player, and I think that's helped. They seem to have good team spirit, and I think this season was always going to be a bit up and down for them, but they seem to be producing the performances of late, and I'm not surprised to see them creeping up the table.
That's interesting. You mentioned Natasha Flynn. I should have mentioned it when we were doing our roundup of the under 20 team. I actually had a conversation with a coach who will remain nameless, who said he was very surprised that she didn't play more of a role in the under 20 side, because she has been so impressive this year for Manchester City. But you're right, she has been one of the standout players. I think some of the other players who are more well known are starting to find their feet as well. I think Tony Duggan is obviously returning from injury, and they've obviously brought in Emma Kete from the New Zealand international, who was playing out in America recently. One controversial piece of news that kind of broke a few weeks ago that I mentioned on the last show but didn't go into too much detail was the fact that Notts County had been penalised for not being able to fulfil a fixture against Bristol Academy. Bristol Academy were awarded 3 points. Now, you're on a break at the moment, but you're a player. If you're one of the Notts County girls and you hear that news, knowing that there's absolutely nothing that you could have done about it, how angry and disappointed are you with that decision?
Oh, very angry. The girls will want to play every game that they can, and the fact that a game was taken away from them out of their hands is, you know, they're going to be very disappointed. And I think the ruling's a bit harsh, but, you know, I'm sort of not involved in the game at the moment, and I'm sort of taking a view from the outside. I'm not quite sure of the ins and outs of all the rules and regulations, but it does seem a little bit harsh, and I'm sure Notts County would have done everything they can to play the game. And in a funny sort of way, I expect Bristol Academy might be a little bit disappointed. You know, they've obviously been awarded the 3 points, which is great. But I think, you know, most footballers will, they want to fight for every point that they get. You don't want to get things handed to you on a plate. And it's disappointing that in this day and age in women's football that games aren't being fulfilled and teams are being punished for that, when really it shouldn't be happening, I don't think, at this stage in women's football in this country.
Well, you mentioned Bristol Academy there. Obviously, Gemma Rose was recently named as the new team captain. I think Corinne Yorston will take on the role of club captain. I know that Gemma is a highly rated young defender, someone I admire a lot, and I'm sure that she will thrive in that role. I guess Hamish will be disappointed for me talking about this, and I get on very well with Andy Spence, and it doesn't give me any pleasure, but Everton continue to struggle, and at the moment for me I don't see a way out of them, out of that position that they're in. But is there any hope for them in trying to claw their way back up the table?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you can write any team off. There's still quite a few games to go. I can see where you're coming from in that they are struggling, and it's hard to see where they might pick up points. But as I said, Nikita Paris is one of the best strikers in the league, I feel. I think she's a tremendous talent. And if she can keep getting on the score sheet as she has been, she's going to help them. Everton have always had a very close group, and Andy's kept it the same way. They do work well together, and you know, they're just going through a very tough time at the moment. Some of their players may need to step up. Some of the senior players might need to get a hold of some of the youngsters and sort of drag them through almost and lead by example. But, you know, if they get a couple of points here and there and get something out of games that they perhaps didn't deserve, the confidence will get higher and they may well be able to get out of it. It'll be tough, but I do think they've got some players in there that have got that little bit of spark that can then nick a goal or nick some points here and there and pull them up the table.
Need to find some goals from elsewhere. I think Nikita Paris is one of the only players to have scored for them in the league, if not the only player, but I'm sure, I hope, that they can get out of it. But then obviously that means I have to pick a team that would replace them in the bottom, and I don't want to particularly do that, so we'll see what happens. Obviously, I think the only clubs we haven't mentioned are probably Liverpool and Arsenal, but I don't think there's an awful lot to say about them at the moment. Liverpool continue to be a little bit up and down. I certainly don't rule them out of the title race. Arsenal maybe have a little bit too much to do in terms of trying to fight for the title, but I think they were on BT Sport recently and they looked okay. They looked not too bad. I think that there's still work to be done there. Obviously still no permanent manager in place. I'm not really sure what's going to happen. Maybe they'll wait till the end of the season now and give it a little bit more time. But I think that's probably about all we need to discuss in WSL 1. So let's move on to WSL 2. Obviously your club, Reading, we might as well start with them. Had a recent 4-0 win away at Watford. That was third against fourth when the game was being played. A certain striker managed to bag a hat-trick. We're going to talk a little bit more about her shortly when we do our England preview. But Fran Kirby's looking pretty impressive at the moment, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a great little player. I'd heard a bit about her before I signed for Reading, as she did so well in the World University Games last summer. But until you sort of see her on the pitch and you play with her, you don't realise quite how good she is. She's just naturally a very gifted and talented footballer. She gets her head down, she gets on with it, she works hard, but the amount of flair and talent she's got, her finishing ability is unreal. You know, you very rarely see her miss the target. Yeah, she's a top player, and I can see her going on to big things.
She's done well, Jane Ludlow, hasn't she? Obviously came into the role, big reputation, having played at Arsenal for so long. Bit of pressure on her, arguably. But she recruited well, didn't she, in adding to that squad. Obviously, she brought yourself in, and I'm sure you're raring to go as and when baby has arrived. And Bonnie Horwood obviously arrived from Watford. She brought in Bianca Bragg from Arsenal. Obviously, there was a few others that came in as well. It's been, I guess, she probably just looked at the squad initially and thought, this is what I've got, but these are the pieces that need sort of fitting to kind of complete the puzzle, and it's kind of working, isn't it?
Yeah, she's done very well. She's used her contacts in the game wisely. Everybody knows she's come from Arsenal, she's been there a long time, and she did a lot of work with the academy, so the likes of Bianca and Molly have come from there, and a couple of others as well, and they're good players, and she's obviously seen that in them. They weren't getting a chance at Arsenal for whatever reason, and they were happy to come along, but she signed a mixture of youth and experience. The likes of Shelley Cox and Kirsty have come from Portsmouth, have played at this level or a similar level for years, and they've come in and steadied the ship a little bit. Nikki Davis was a shrewd signing in goal, although Grace Maloney is also a very good goalkeeper, so she's got competition in most areas of the pitch. I'm sure she'd say her worst signing was probably me, because I haven't played a minute of WSL football this season. But
waste of money, health.
But, you know, as you said, I'll be raring to go next season, and I look forward to playing with this group of girls, because I think she's got them playing some fantastic football.
Maybe outsiders for promotion, if not this year, certainly next year. I mentioned Watford. Obviously, never hide the fact that it's my club. I'm a Watford boy. One of the big pieces of news that happened, not exactly recently now, but I haven't done a show on English football for a while. Sarah Wiltshire left and moved down to Yeovil. Bit of a surprise for me. I don't know what your view on that was. And have you got any insight as to why that might have been? Because I haven't been told anything.
It was a big surprise to me, I must admit. I'd heard sort of some rumours that she wasn't happy, and I think after an international break she'd come back from a holiday and she was on the bench, which surprised me. I just assumed she had an injury, and then with that, you know, she'd signed for Yeovil. Obviously she gets on well with Jamie Sherwood, who is now the manager and was the coach at Yeovil, because she played for Cardiff in the close season a couple of years ago, so whether that relationship is what made her decision, I'm not sure. I haven't actually spoken to her myself. As I said, I've sort of lost a bit of touch with the game as I've not been in it, so I don't really know any more than anyone else does on that subject.
Supplying half the Welsh team, aren't they, Yeovil? They've got Sarah, Helen Bleasard. Katie Sherwood is obviously retired, well, certainly not in the Welsh setup at the moment, but there's always room for a comeback, I'm sure. Ellie Curzon is obviously there as well. It's like mini Wales in Yeovil. But yeah, no, Nicola Cousins as well, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, from a Watford perspective, disappointed to see Sarah go. Incredibly talented. I said it on an earlier show, for me, one of the best players in the division. I think Frank Kirby is the standout player, as we mentioned, but Sarah is one that, for me, that I incredibly admire, and I was disappointed to see her go. Watford have made a few signings from various clubs, from Arsenal, from Leicester, to try and add a bit of depth to the squad. I still think they'll be kind of mid-table-ish this season. I think the likes of Doncaster and Sunderland, who we'll talk about in a second, are probably going to be the teams that continue to run away with it. London Bees are a club that I'd like to talk about a little bit. Some of the scorelines that I've seen them involved in, very, very one-sided.
Yeah, you've got a feel for them, really. I've been to see them fairly recently when Reading beat them 8-1, which obviously didn't count in the end, for whatever reason, but you know, they did well in the first half. It was 1-1 at half time, and I thought, they're not a bad young side. You can tell they are very young. They almost look like they're an under 17 or under 19 side being pushed up into a senior league. Whether that was the philosophy of the club to promote all their youngsters from within, I'm not sure. But it's one hell of a steep learning curve for those players. And you know, I know Cherie, who's the goalkeeper down there, she's not had a lot of game time, but I'm sure she'll be hurting at the fact that so many goals are flying in past, you know, her and Sophie, the other goalkeeper. It can't be easy to be getting beat week in, week out with big score lines, but I'm sure there is a philosophy in place at the club, and if they stick by it and results start to come, then they'll know they've done the right thing. But you know, I do feel for them, and I can't quite see where it's going to improve. But you know, hopefully I'll be proved wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you used the term learning curve in there, and I think you're absolutely right. I probably apply that a little bit to Oxford and Durham as well. Obviously, two new sides to this level. They've jumped up an awful lot in terms of where they've come from in the football pyramid. Probably putting up a bit more resilience than London Bees, if we're honest. Certainly not looking to criticise London Bees. As you say, you have to feel for them. No one wants to see 13-0 score lines against Chelsea and 7-0 against Arsenal and 8-1 against Reading. It's not good for the game, and it's not good for their confidence, and I think it would certainly be something that I wouldn't want to see happening too often. I think Oxford and Durham, as mentioned, have been slightly more resilient, although haven't exactly been able to challenge the more established, bigger sides in the division, but maybe in time they will be able to do that. Deliberately left a couple of clubs to the end. Doncaster and Sunderland, and apologies if I've missed anyone else out. We'll obviously cover more teams as the season goes on. Doncaster and Sunderland leading the way. Sunderland ahead by a few points. They're looking strong for promotion and living up to that tags as favourites from the start of the year, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by the fact that those two are at the top. I was surprised that Doncaster were held to a, a 0-0 draw against Durham recently, because I expected fully that Doncaster would go out there and win it fairly comfortably. Helps Reading out, of course, that they did drop points, and Reading play both teams in the next couple of league games, I believe, at home. So they'll be big games. But I do think Sunderland and Doncaster have both got a little bit too much for the rest of the teams. They've got a lot of experience in their sides. Doncaster in particular kept, I think, their entire squad from last season and have added a couple more to it. And they seem to be playing very well. And Sunderland, you know, it's been year after year after year that they've come good at this level. And, you know, if they do win the league, all credit to them. And I do hope they get the chance to go up into WSL 1 and compete, because I think they should have been there originally anyway, myself. They've got a good club, a good setup, and they're constantly producing very good youngsters. And I do feel that they will deserve a chance in the WSL 1 if it comes to that. But at the same time, any other team that wins the league also deserves a chance.
We're going to hear from Sunderland manager Mick Mulhern very shortly to talk about how they're getting on, and you mentioned the players that they've produced over the years. One question I have before we go to that interview is the scheduling of the WSL this season. We're now into August. The season is due to finish in October. Some teams have only played half of their games. Some teams haven't played for a number of weeks. We had that four-week break in June, which for me, I don't really know why that occurred. That must be frustrating for players, because it just seems very, very stop-start. The season started in April, 4 months in, and some teams have not played many games, have they?
Yeah, it is difficult. Every year we've had a break, you know, whether it's for the Euros, the Olympics, the World Cup, whatever it might be. And this year I thought, as most people did, that, oh, brilliant, we'll have a whole season straight through, no breaks. But apparently there's some sort of rule that non-league teams, or, you know, semi-pro teams, or a lot of the grounds where the teams play, don't want matches played on their pitches in June. Which is fair enough, but then why have a league in the summer if you can't play games in the summer? So it's difficult as a player. You get into a bit of a rhythm, and you're doing well, and then you've got a 4 week break. All of a sudden, you can pick up injuries in that break. You can lose a bit of form. You can lose that sharpness, and you're starting again come the beginning of the summer. So it is very, very hard. But I suppose the only argument is it's the same for every team, and you just have to crack on and get on with it. And there's not much we can do at the moment.
Didn't know about that ruling about football in June. I never swear on this podcast, but that is bollocks. That is bollocks.
That's what I think the ruling is anyway. I don't know how official that is, but that's what I've heard. That's why the games aren't being played in June, because grounds want to relay their surface.
Yeah, I'll say again, bollocks. But what can you do? I just don't think it's good for the players when the season is so stop-start. They want to get momentum. They want to get into a rhythm. I do understand there have been some games postponed because of the Under-20 World Cup, which is completely fair enough when you've not got your best players available. I'm in favour of that. But yeah, I'm not quite sure why there was the break in June. It made no sense whatsoever. If there is that ruling, then that's something that they clearly need to look at. But as mentioned already a little bit ago, I do have an interview with Sunderland manager Mick Mulhern, a man that has been involved in the club for a number of years, produced some very, very well-known England internationals and young players that have come through the system. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit more about that. So here he is. OK, so Mick, thanks for joining me on the show. I guess there's nowhere better to start than looking at where Sunderland sit at the moment, top of the WSL 2. You must be pretty pleased at the moment with how things are going this season.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased at the moment, because obviously things can change very quickly. It's a very tough league. I guess one of the good things is it's something that we've done for the last few years, having won the league the last 3 years. So I guess that winning mentality is already in place, and one or two younger players are coming in and maybe getting used to, you know, what's necessary and what it takes to sort of be a winner, I suppose. But we're not naive, as we haven't been over the last few seasons, and we know that, you know, there's always somebody close enough to catch us. So hopefully we can stay ahead.
You're undefeated at the moment. I've seen your team a number of times over the last 2 or 3 years. You seem to have this habit of, even when you go behind or you're maybe not playing at your best, that you seem to be able to grind out results and have come back in a number of occasions from positions where you're losing a game. What is it about your team and about your players that kind of has that mentality, and how do you kind of develop that going forward?
I guess it's something we've worked on for a long time with regards to that, the winning mentality. You'd never accept that you beat the game last 90 minutes. I've said numerous times, whether we score or concede from the first minute, the 17th minute or 53rd minute, the game isn't won. And I know it's a cliche, but it's usually around about 94 minutes. And we just keep going. And we'll have that determination and character to try and grind out results. And yeah, we haven't always played well. And to be fair, this season, last week's performance against Millwall was our best. Before that, we've been average.
Okay. Well, I think it would be fair to say, obviously, this is the first season for the WSL2. And I think when it was announced that the league was going to be expanded and that even the clubs in the first division would have to reapply for their licence, that a lot of people looked at Sunderland as a club that arguably, even when the WSL started initially, were probably unfortunate to miss out. You then miss out again when obviously the application process is reintroduced for this season. Did that kind of motivate your players even more, to the point where you've missed out on the application from what you've written down on a piece of paper, and now you're saying to the authorities, essentially, if you're not going to accept us based on our application, you'll have to accept us based on what we produce on the field?
No, I think the first time we were obviously very disappointed not to get in, because we thought we'd got there on merit and from the football ability and what we were doing, but it obviously wasn't about that. And I understand perfectly why that wasn't the case. I mean, you had to have a solid foundation, a financial foundation in place, and we didn't fit the criteria at that time, and that's fair enough. This time we have, and we're in. It didn't really matter if it was WSL 1 or 2, as long as you were in. And to be honest, we were probably fairly happy to be in WSL 2 initially until we find our feet, because there's an awful lot of things that can go wrong, and if you get it wrong in that first season, you end up coming down anyway. So at least this way you can build and get a solid platform, and everyone's learned a very lot about what to be doing. I mean, our general manager, she's come in and knew it all, and she's done a great job. She's always at the meetings and find out what it takes. So we're kind of taking steps forward to be ready to be a WSL one side. Arguably some of the players, would have been good enough to go in there anyway. But we've also got a lot of young players, and maybe this is a good year for them to develop.
Well, you mentioned the players that you've got. Many will know the likes of Beth Mead, who's obviously just been representing England in the Under-20 World Cup. You've got other young players who've come through the system, Kira Ramshaw, Rachel Laws, others will know, obviously, from her loan spell at Liverpool in the WSL last year. But you've got a history at Sunderland for producing not only good young players, but local good young players. What is it about the club that's, number one, able to attract those players, but number two, to be able to develop them to such a high standard that they've been able to go on and represent the club, but also to go and represent other big clubs in their country? And we'll talk about a few of those in a bit.
Yeah, I guess it was the early years. We got promoted in my first season was 1999-2000, and it was in 2000 we actually changed the name to Sunderland from what we were, Blythe Kestrels, Eastern Kestrels. And I realised in that first season we lost a lot of players to America who were students, and obviously the North East, it's a case of players, you can't get players to travel in the North East, it's a long way, so it was a case about developing our own. So I managed to take over. I was given sort of the reins of the Centre of Excellence, and the first thing this was an under 16 team, because they only had 12s and 14s, and it was an awful lot of work away from Sunderland, looking at teams in schools and local league football, and just networking, finding out who was around. I'd been at a local club called Bolden, and again that was a junior club, and I'd worked there for 3 years, so I had a good idea. There was girls there, including Jill and Demi, who later came to the club, and one or two others. So it was just a case of going round those clubs and trying to get them in the centre of excellence. And a lot of the girls who you see now have been in there since they were 10-year-old. Like the Rachel Laws, Abby Holmes, people like that. They were kids. Demi, Jill, they all came from the centre of excellence, Steph Horton, in fact they all did. And, you know, I guess we got it right, but it's putting the foundation in place, really, about development was the way we had to do it, because geographically we were in the, you know, an awkward part of the country, I guess.
Mm, absolutely. Well, you mentioned Demi Stokes, Jill Scott, Steph Horton, there's a few. Jordan Nobbs, obviously, another. Lucy Bronze. Yep. I mean, the list, Carly Telford, the list seems to be endless. And obviously, they've all gone to obtain international honours. Obviously, they, a few of those represented England against Sweden a few weeks ago in Hartlepool. Yep. Obviously, the first game in the North East since, I think, the mid-90s when England played at Roker Park, which obviously for younger supporters and younger followers of our show won't actually remember where that is. But, I mean, that must have been a proud moment for you, seeing those players not only represent their country, but to represent it in their home region as well.
Yeah, everything. I mean, I've seen England several times over the years at various levels, and the players you've mentioned, I've seen them play through the under-19s and right the way through to full senior level. But obviously, to have such a group of them there on the one weekend, there were six of them in the squad. I went down on the Saturday to see Mark and Marianne anyway, and obviously have a chat with the girls and watch the session. And yeah, it was good to see them. I didn't actually get to see the game on the Sunday, but obviously it was nice to see them on the Saturday and watch them train, and obviously very proud to sort of see their involvement and how well they're all doing, really.
They're all of a similar age as well, aren't they? Jordan's obviously, I think, a little bit younger than maybe Steph and Lucy. Yeah. What is it about that particular crop of players that that was so special about them that's enabled them to go on and achieve international honours?
Well, they were all different age groups in the Centre of Excellence. There were, you know, there were different stages, and it was just one of those things where we had a couple in each age group, and I think we've always managed to have two or three in each age group who've managed to get selected for England at whatever level. And you've mentioned those, and there's obviously players in our squad now, the current squad, there's three just being selected for the under-19s, and obviously Beth was away with the under-20s, and Alexa Kira and Becky Bass are you know, in that sort of picture as well. And Becky didn't come through us, but again, aware of Becky from sort of junior football and whatnot. But I don't know, I guess we just must have got something right, really, with regards to what we were doing at the Centre of Excellence in the first place, and then obviously getting them in the senior squad. And in some cases it was younger ages, because the likes of Carly, Steph and Jill were allowed to play football when they were 14 at senior level, and they made their debut at 14, so they got that experience. And the likes of Demi and Jordan and Lucy had to wait until they were 16. Those three were in the same group. So, you know, I guess we just got it right. It's pleasing to think that we're up there with, you know, in the top three clubs in the country at producing England players.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, look at one of the players you've got at the moment. She's been top scorer in the Premier League the previous two seasons, Beth Mead. We managed to have a very quick chat with her at the FA Awards last year. Obviously, she collected her trophy for being top scorer. And one of the things that she said was, obviously, her ambitions were to get Sunderland into the WSL1 and to represent England at senior level. You've worked with a lot of top players, or certainly players that have gone on to achieve international honours, as we've already mentioned. How good is she, and how long do you think it will be before she's representing her country at senior level?
I think the hardest part of the women's game is to find a goal scorer. And she's a goal scorer, and she just needs half a chance. And she's very good at what she does. And again, I was watching Beth when she was sort of 12 year old, when she was then it was Middlesbrough Centre of Excellence before it became Teesside. And if I could, I would have signed her at 14 if the rules had been as they were, because I honestly believe at that age she was good enough to play senior women's football. She was tremendous, so it was just a case of having to wait until she was old enough to come to us, and then it was a bit of a fight because everybody wanted her, but I knew her, and I had to go and, you know, had to go and sort of meet her dad and stuff to try and get that sorted. And I worked hard to get her signed for us, and what an important signing she's been. I mean, she's come into the club and worked hard, and she is working hard at a game. And, you know, it's not all about Beth, as Beth will tell you herself, and so the rest of the girls. She's on the end of what we're producing as a team from back to front. But you need that, and it's important to have a goal scorer. And she's very good at what she does.
Well, I guess my final question would be, I am in no way assuming that you're counting your chickens, but if Sunderland are successful in going up this year, I guess my question would be, how prepared are you for the potential challenges that the WSL1 present to you?
Well, obviously, we've got things in place, and we're looking at players, how we can improve the group. But again, that's difficult. you've got to attract players, and then there's the contracts that's involved, and if there's worrying club contracts, I guess like everybody else, you try and find out who's potentially available and how you can do it. We've got a good group, but I'm not stupid, and we definitely need to add to what we've got, because if we're going to go up, we've got to go up and make an impact. And I've seen the level that the WSL 1 teams are at this year, haven't played three of them in the cup, and they're all very good, and Everton are very good, and yet they're bottom of the league with 2 points. And I think if they were unlucky enough to come down, and you know, whoever comes down from WSL 1 will be, with their squads, too strong for WSL 2. There's a difference, there's a big difference. So we've got to be, you know, we've got to be spot on.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so that was Mick Mulhern talking all things Sunderland, and wish them well for the remainder of the WSL 2 season. Going to have a chat about Wales against England. Rather big World Cup qualifier coming up this week. Helen obviously can't be involved, which I'm sure you're pretty gutted about. It's your fault for choosing to have a baby around this time. But obviously a big, big game for Wales, and obviously hoping that it'll pull in a big crowd at Cardiff City Stadium.
Yeah, it's a huge game. You know, we had the away tie last year, which I was fortunate enough to play in, and I think we did ourselves proud in that game. We were disappointed, obviously, to lose and concede the two goals quite quickly after half time, but we learnt a lot from that, and I know Yarmo will have the girls working hard and on team shape and trying to get the victory that will keep us in with a shout of qualifying. Obviously it's going to be very, very difficult. I think England only need one point to guarantee progression and into the finals in Canada, but we're still fighting for that second place, so if we can get any points on the board, it keeps us above Ukraine for now, and then we go into the final game of the campaign, you know, on a high.
As you mentioned, you played in that first game. What did you as players learn from that fixture, and what do you think Yarmo will have taken from it that he'll try and apply to the game in Wales this week?
I think one of the biggest things we learned is that we can compete, and we did for large parts of the games. We had a couple of chances, myself included. I had, you know, one or two that I feel I should have done better with. But yeah, the biggest thing I think was belief. We've got a lot of belief in the squad now, and the campaign's gone on, and they're the only points, along with the draw against Ukraine, that we've dropped, which is a huge achievement for Wales. We've never done so well in a qualifying campaign. So, you know, the belief is there, but also you learn that you've got to concentrate for 90 minutes. You switch off against a team like England, and they will punish you, as they showed us twice. It was two sloppy moments of defensive play, you know, not from the defenders as such, but from front to back. We weren't in the right shape for either of the goals, and we got punished, and you know, they walked away with a 2-0 victory, and we were really disappointed with that.
You'll be missing. Hayley Ladd will obviously be missing, broke her leg in a recent World Cup qualifier. How do you think Yarmo is going to set up? We were talking off recording beforehand, and you've got an inkling that he might be looking to maybe set up a bit more defensively than he maybe would against some other teams.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the nature of the squad that he's got available to him, Hayley is a huge loss. She's a very underrated player in terms of, I think, what opposition may think of her, but when you play with her, you learn how good she can be. She's not fancy, she's not flash, but she's a very, very solid player, and one of the best youngsters that we've had come through Wales in a long, long time. And although I say youngster, she's actually very experienced as well now in international football. And in the 2 or 3 years that she's been in the senior team, she's established herself and she has become a very important player. So she'll be a huge loss. I think Yarmo will do what he usually does, and he'll set us up, or set the girls up, to be in a very solid shape. It won't be too many risks taken, especially early on in the game, and he'll want to keep things tight and keep things, you know, very solid, and not let England get on top too much. But at the same time, he knows that we need goals and we need the points, so he'll have players out on the pitch such as Jess, Tash, Sarah, you know, Lauren and Helen out wide. I think they'll all be given licence to go and create things going forward as well. And you know, there'll be an emphasis on trying to keep the ball a bit better than we did against them last time. There's lots of very, very good ball players on in the Wales team. So, you know, if they can build a little bit of confidence early in the game, keep things tight, I think they'll have chances, and it's just having the composure to take them, I think.
England have scored goals for fun in the qualifying group. A lot of people, including myself, probably questioning how they would fare against one of the major nations, and that's no disrespect to Wales. Obviously, you, as you've already said, gave them a very competitive game down at Millwall in the home fixture for England. Obviously, last time out, probably answered a lot of questions by beating Sweden 4-0. How on earth do Wales try and stop that forward line that is now looking very, very impressive? We obviously mentioned Fran earlier, who's come into the squad. Jodie Taylor is back in the squad again. Leanne Sanderson, Tash Dowie and Enya Luca. I mean, that's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's going to be very tough for Wales. They've got a lot of pace, a lot of quality up front. As you said, whether they're on the pitch or on the bench. They've also got players coming through from midfield that can score goals, the likes of Jordan Nobbs, Karen Carney, Farrah Williams. They're all, you know, they're all top players, and it will be a massive task for Wales to stop that. However, you know, they're players that the girls play against week in, week out. A lot of the Wales team, you know, will know a lot about the England players, and perhaps they can use that to their advantage. But it will be tough. They have got a lot of class and a lot of quality. And as you said, they've scored an awful lot of goals. But they haven't scored that many against Wales. And I'm hoping that it will stay that way. But, yeah, I think the girls will be up for it, and they'll give a good account of themselves. But it will be a tough game.
I think it's going to be very exciting. I'm absolutely gutted that I can't actually make the game myself. I will be watching it on the TV. I guess my final question would be, this time next year, Canada 2015... In a word, how confident are you that Wales will be represented in Canada?
Quietly.
Diplomatic. But that will, obviously, I'm sure Wales will take a lot of confidence. Obviously, they had a recent draw away in Scotland, which I'm sure will have given them a boost in confidence. And Jess Fishlock wasn't playing in that game due to her commitments with the Seattle Reign. From a personal perspective, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for Wales, but I certainly wouldn't rule them out. As you've already mentioned, they will know more than any other team in this group about England, having many players playing in a WSL1 and WSL2. I think the key will be to stop that forward line at the moment. I thought Leanne Sanderson was incredibly impressive against Sweden. I don't necessarily know if Jodie and Fran will start the game like they did last time out. I would imagine Enya Luca and Tash Dowie will probably be involved. I think you're all right. Jordan Nobbs, Karen Carney, both very, very impressive from midfield and are always capable of scoring goals. But you never know. Football is a game of 90 minutes and you just never know. You get one chance and you take it, and then you set up shop. You never really know what might happen. But I think it's going to be an enthralling fixture. And obviously we will talk more about it on a future show. And when we come back, I will be talking to some colleagues. Not colleagues. I will be talking French football with some journalists based out in France. Okay, so for this part of the show, as I mentioned in our introduction, we're going to talk a little bit about French football and the upcoming French season. And I'm delighted to be joined by Marine Ledoit from Foot Del. Marine, thank you very much for joining me on the show. Ça va?
Très bien. Perfect. Thank you for you to having me on the show. It's perfect.
So for anyone that doesn't know, Foot Del are a very, very interesting organisation that cover French football. They know 100 times more than I do, so it was a great opportunity to get them on the show to talk about the upcoming season. So I guess the first question that I would ask, Marine, is how excited are French football fans for the upcoming season?
I think I can talk for everyone here. We are very, very excited for the French league to debut. It's going to be a very, very, very interesting season this season, because as you know, we have PSG, Lyon, and this year we have Montpellier, who is the third club to be professional this year. So it's going to be a very, very interesting season. And it's going to be with the new players that we have, like Egerberg. We have Seger and PSG. It's going to be a very tough season for Lyon, but very interesting.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually. It was to ask, what have you made of some of the transfers? You obviously mentioned Ada Hegerberg to Lyon. Caroline Sager has joined PSG. The German international, Alushi, has also joined PSG. Sofia Jakobsen has gone to Montpellier. Could you tell us what the sort of thoughts are of you guys regarding those transfers?
As I say, it's going to be very interesting. It shows that the women's soccer in France is very in good shape. We have like very talented players like Seger, who is very talented Swedish player who is coming to France. France football is very interesting now, and player like Jakobsen, Egerberg, who really wants to play in the women's French league, it shows that we are very in good shape and we can do not better than German football, because we really know that German football is like 10 years faster than us. But it's very show that the French league is very in good shape, and it's a very interesting league this year. And with players like that, it's going to be a very, very good good football to watch.
Well, Lyon have been very dominant over the last few years. They obviously have added Ada Hegerberg, as you mentioned. They've still got players like Camille Abeli, Louise Nassib, Lotte Schellen. Do you guys think that anyone can actually compete with them this year?
As you say, Lyon is a very good team, but we hope not that we are pro PSG, but we think that PSG can not beat Lyon, because we truly think that Lyon would be the championship this year. But PSG can be the big surprise. Not the big surprise, but they can be on the first place. But they have like new player like Seger and Henning. They have to do the work. But Lyon with Messi, Blossomer, Tomis, great players like that, we think it's going to be hard for PSG to beat Lyon this season. But it's going to be a very good battle.
Well, I actually went to Lyon in January, and I watched PSG beat Lyon. So it is certainly achievable. You mentioned earlier that Montpellier are going to be one of the professional clubs. Juvisy in the past have been one of the big French clubs, but maybe not as big as PSG and Lyon now. Do you think those two clubs are going to be able to compete with PSG and Lyon?
Montpellier, it's a new team. You have a lot of, you have like Jakobsen, who plays now for Montpellier. For me, they have just one weakness, is that they don't have leadership. So it's going to be difficult, maybe in 2 years, not this year. Montpellier can compete with Lyon and PSG. It's going to be a very interesting year to watch Montpellier, but not this year. I think in 2-3 years, Montpellier can be a very, very good team. And for Juvisy, Juvisy play with her hearts. So they're going to finish like third or fourth place. But we don't think that they can beat PSG and Lyon. It's going to be a battle, but Lyon and PSG will be the two most important club here.
Mm. Well, Juvisy obviously have players like Gaëtan Tine, the French international, who is obviously well thought of and is certainly capable of scoring goals.
They can create the surprise like this last year, like finishes third, like battle with PSG at the last game. But this year PSG and Lyon are very the top two. Montpellier, the top, the third one. And it's going to be, we're not sure if it's going to be a surprise or not, but it's going to be Lyon, PSG, Montpellier, Juvisy. But
absolutely,
we cannot say.
No, you never know. You never know. And for UK fans and UK followers of our show, it's also worth mentioning that Jennifer Beattie, the Scotland international, is currently at Montpellier as well. We've talked about those four clubs quite a lot. I would be the first to admit that I don't know an awful lot about some of the other teams. You guys will know an awful lot more than me. Could you give us a little bit of insight into some of the others? You don't have to go through them all individually, but something about the other teams.
We only have PSG, Lyon, but we also have Guingamp and Soyo, like the very good team. team. Guingamp, as you know, there is seven players who is playing now in the U-22 World Cup. So it's going to be a very young team, but very interesting. And for Soyo, they did a very, very good year last year. And we think they can be a surprise, like the fifth place or fourth place. We don't know. It's going to be, these two teams, Guingamp and Soyo, are very interesting, young players. So it's going to be fun to watch. And because they are the next generation, so it's going to be fun and interesting to watch them.
I have to say, this conversation is educational for me, not only because I'm learning about some of the teams, but the pronunciations. I think Soyo is certainly not how I've been saying it over the time I've been speaking about them. Well, I guess my final question would be, because I don't want to take up too much of your time, and obviously you as well as I are going to be watching the Under-20 World Cup matches that take place this evening.
Yeah.
Could you potentially pick out some players that you guys think are worth looking out for this year? I have my players, but I'm sure you've got some as well.
Yeah, it's... a lot of players is very interesting this year. I think, like, for the top three club, we have like Lyon, but we can say every player, but we're gonna say like Egerberg and Nessib. It's gonna be the two top players to watch for Lyon. For PSG, it's gonna be for us Seger, Cruz, and Oran. So she's coming back for the Under-22 World Cup. And for Montpellier, you have Tonazi, who was with Lyon last year. So she's going to be the very good forward for the Montpellier team. We have two young players like Lavogès and Toiti, who is also in the Under-22 World Cup this in Montreal, Canada. So yeah, the Tonazi, Lavogès, Toiti, Seger, Cruz, Oran, and Egerberg, and Nessi. Okay. And Anson, for us, is going to be these players to watch this year.
No, excellent players. We've had Ada Hegerberg on the show before, and certainly a very, very talented young player. I would probably add Gaëtan Tine to that, but I think many people will know about her qualities already. And as I say, Jenny Beattie from Montpellier, it's always worth looking out for her as a fan of anyone who's based in the UK. But Marine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. I do hope that the French season provides some excitement and some interesting results, and hopefully we can speak to you guys again later in the season.
Thank you to you. It was a very pleasure to talk about the French at the football. And yeah, we really hope that people like the UK people, German, are watching in September the new fresh championship.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Follow the podcast on Twitter
at WFPod.
So that was Marine Ledoit talking about all things women's football in France. And that brings us to the end of the show. And first off, I, of course, have to thank my co-host for the second time, Helen Ward. And I'm going to assume, Helen, that the next time we see you, if you choose to come back on the show, you will have a lovely bundle of joy bringing you much happiness. Obviously, your baby, as mentioned before, is due in October, so thank you very much for joining me, and I do wish you well for the arrival of baby Ward. I, of course, also have to thank Sunderland ladies manager Mick Mulhern for coming on the show, and of course again to Marine from Foot Del for coming on and talking about the French season. I obviously do have the competition winner to still pick for the Brandy Chastain jersey. I apologise. I was going to do the draw with Helen today and I've left all of the names back at home. But I do promise that we will draw the winner on the next show. I can assure you that will happen. No American soccer on this episode. As you may have seen this week, we did release a NWSL preview for the upcoming playoff games this weekend, so please do check that out. Just some details to rattle off very quickly. If you do wish to listen to us on iTunes, you can do so. You can also listen to us online at audioboo.fm/WFPod. If you wish to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We are on at WFPod. And if you wish to email me, you can do. Please always feel free to get in contact. We're on the WFPod@gmail.com. So that wraps it up for this episode, guys. We'll be back in a week or two looking back at the England-Wales game and any other games that have been taking place of relevance, and we will catch up with you soon.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.